At InDigital, we know the public safety professionals hold themselves to a high standard. In fact, standard doesn't do it justice. In over 25 years working alongside you, carrying millions of calls over our IP networks, your dedication has inspired us. That's why our ESINet goes beyond industry standards, not only I3 compliant, but designed to adapt to future development for a network you can count on when it matters most. Learn more at InDigital.net.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, opened your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and we're about to get started with Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And a big shout out to patrons and Facebook subscribers. Thank you so, so very much. I wouldn't be able to do what I do if it wasn't for all of you who help support the podcast and everything that I put out there, but especially all of you who are watching, listening, sharing, and supporting. Thank you so, so very much. There is a lot going on already at the beginning of 2023. Happy New Year to all of you, and a lot of bonus content coming up for subscribers, and a lot of awesome, powerful episodes coming up for all listeners to begin with. So, there are also going to be speaking engagements, other conferences that are coming up, keynotes, imagine listening sessions that will be coming to different dispatch centers. So look out for that as well. And I'm just excited for everything that is going to be going on. I can't say enough. So thank you for all of it. Also, this is the 10-year anniversary of Within the Trenches podcast. And man, I would have never thought when I first started doing all of this that we would be where we are at right now. I believe this is going to be episode 477. Whew. If you would have told me this all that time ago, I would not have believed you. I would have continued fighting for what I believe in, this mission that I've had since the beginning, but I might not have believed that I would be here doing what I do for a living. So thank you all for the support over all these years. I appreciate it so much. So I am excited for my guest today, and this is going to be a good one. We were already chuckling and stuff when we first got started. We were in the green room talking and everything, and we're going to get started here. This is going to be good. My guest today is Shay, and she's a dispatcher with Pershing County Sheriff's Office out of Nevada. Hello.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
All right. Excellent. I'm going to be honest. When I said the name of your agency, when we were talking in the beginning of how people usually pronounce it, I had to think about it for a moment because I almost said it. Like, I don't know if you could see it on my face. I hesitated for a split second because I almost said it the way you said other people say it.
Well, we actually have a dispatcher who comes up and she goes, Pershing County Sheriff's Office. And I'm like,
it's Pershing.
Kind of like the way people say Nevada.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, you know, there's a when I first started doing the podcast, I ended up, but it was probably about 6 months or so afterwards, I ended up going to Florida to record at this little mini conference. It was called the Mini C. And there were some newer folks in their academy that I recorded with. And I've got a picture of myself sitting at this table with them. But the person who was putting it on, it was in Boca Raton, Florida. And I had asked him, it's not Raton, right? And he goes, don't ever say that to someone who's around here. Yeah, he's like, that is not the way you say it. It's Boca Raton, not Raton. And I was like, okay.
My bad.
Yeah, my bad. I will make sure to say it right all the time. Do not murder me. My bad. Oh, man. Yeah, there's words and everything like that in every state. And I'm sure there is every agency has a road that can give a chuckle because people absolutely don't know how to pronounce it. Right, yeah. So, this is going to be good. This is going to be interesting because you are 5 months into your dispatching career. You just got out of training and stuff. So this is going to be good. This is going to be a different type of episode. Only in the sense that it's so early, but we get to learn so much. And that's why I'm excited to talk to you as well. So just to begin with, how did you get involved in public safety? Do you come from a family, you know, of public safety, or did you just jump in?
So my current family, no, but the family that I married into, yes. Mm-hmm. My husband is a first responder for the Grass Valley Volunteer Fire Department. And I actually just became a volunteer as well. And he's the one who got me into it in the beginning. I have always had an interest. I kind of wanted to be a wildland firefighter when I was in high school. I wanted to go in the military. Then I was like, oh man, maybe being a cop would be cool. And he's got a good friend that is a deputy down in our area. And I remember we were up trying to help him with a call one time because he didn't know the area very well. And he was on the phone with one of his, I think the individuals that was involved in the crash that was going on. And he looked at me and he like starts doing like typing or writing. And I was like, oh, take notes. Okay. So I grabbed my phone and I took a bunch of notes that he would just say and then repeat them to me. And I wrote it down and everything. And he got off the phone and he was like, dispatch. And I was like, what is that? He's like, we need to be a dispatcher. He was like, we don't have a lot of them. You know, we definitely don't have a lot of good ones. And he was like, you know, you need to look again into dispatch. And I was like, shit, okay. So that was back in 2020, and I mm-hmm. finally landed a position in August 2022.
Oh, man. So what were you doing before then?
So I'm kind of jack of all trades, master. Uh-huh. When I was growing up, I grew up on a farm. I worked a lot with equipment, a lot with horses, just out in the dirt doing whatever. I've moved around quite a bit from between here and then into Idaho. Up there I did, you know, just a lot of customer service jobs and everything. When I became an adult, though, I kind of moved around. I think I worked for like Subway and Walmart for a couple of months, but I worked for an accounting company. Mm-hmm. They're called Swenson and Company down here. There I just did like taxes, payroll, and stuff. I was there for about 2 years before I had my daughter, and then I decided I wasn't going to work anymore. Mm-hmm. I didn't end up working out. But that was kind of like my career, you could say, for quite a while was just within the tax accounting industry.
So do you feel like some of the stuff that you were doing before getting into public safety was kind of preparing you already a little bit?
In some ways, yeah, mm-hmm. I guess, especially like with the fire department and being exposed to that kind of stuff with my husband. Like I said, I just started back in October with them. But hearing, like, with him, like, what he did and, you know, having emergencies of my own and stuff, you know, whenever he's always said, just make sure that you give really good descriptions of where you're at, you know, what you're driving or what you're wearing or who this other person is wearing and stuff. And so from his perspective, I think it definitely prepared me and everything. And then just knowing different deputies and stuff within the sheriff's office itself.
Nice. That is awesome. Every person that I've spoken to, it seems like whatever it was that they were doing before getting into public safety, somehow, some way, they were on their way of already kind of training themselves, whether it's customer service or to just a lot of different things. It helped them in a way. You know, yeah, they end up having some sort of experience that lends a hand to what you do while you're on the phone and dealing with people, because, you know, people call in, they're not calling in on their best day. So,
right. Yeah.
So you have this time that, you know, you're taking all of these notes and stuff, and it's like, dispatch, like, this is what you need to do. Now, did you have a chance to get in there and do like a sit along, or did you ever do any ride alongs with the fire department before you became volunteer fire as well?
So with dispatch, I didn't actually sit in until I think 2 weeks before I was hired.
Oh.
Or until working. And it was actually the undersheriff. He advised that, he's like, you know, you need to come in and sit and, you know, like, make sure this is what you want to do, because it's a lot. I'm like, oh, it's fine, it's cool. And so I came in and sat in with them, I think like every week up until I went in for like my psych evaluation and drug tests and all that stuff before I actually started working. And I was like, I mean, we got six screens sitting in front of us. Like, the for us being such a small community, we have a fairly high call volume and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do. And then as far as the fire department and stuff goes, my husband's like taking me around mm-hmm. in some of the trucks and everything, kind of showed me the area. But there is definitely a lot of areas south of us that I don't know very well. The road names down there are like Mason, Harry, George or something like that. And that's, I don't know very well, but mm-hmm. within like my little community here, those I do, I know pretty by heart, I guess you could say, but.
Nice. So
at some point, go on a ride along with a deputy or an officer or something like that to learn Lovelock and mm-hmm. then up here as well. But we haven't been able to get to that yet just because of staffing issues and stuff. So.
Oh, of course. Staffing issues everywhere, right?
Right.
That is all over the place. Now, with the time that you had gone out with him, and, you know, this being, you know, before dispatch and stuff too, you know, you've got that experience there as well, listening to the radio. So listening to the radio and stuff, I mean, did you immediately find that stuff fascinating as well? Just kind of listening to some of the calls that were going out to?
I did. Yes, definitely. So we also have so from where I'm sitting in my house, just mm-hmm. above us is Humboldt County. Mm-hmm. And we can also listen to their, before they switch over to the digital one, we could listen to their scanners and stuff, and listening to that and like hearing the time codes, I'm like, what are all these guys saying? And then there was one of the dispatchers that I was trained mostly by, she ends everything with the time. Mm-hmm. So if I were to talk to you right now, I'd be like, 10-4 whatever, and then 13-19. And so when I went in, I was like, is that a coach? She's like, no, it's the time. And I was like, oh. Because I was like, am I gonna have to like remember all these codes in regard to like what call it is?
Right. Yeah,
it's really fascinating and stuff just to listen to them and for them to be so quick. I mean, they're just like on top of it.
So I think it's awesome. And also a show of your dedication that you were in there for like a week straight, you said, right? You were in there sitting with them, just kind of getting a feel. Now, as you're in there that whole time, was it more so, you know, like shifts where there was stuff going on? Or were there a couple times where you're sitting there just kind of thinking, is this it?
So with us, I know that a lot of different agencies are like, nights are a lot more busier for them. It's completely mm-hmm. opposite for us. It's so much more busier on days. I don't know why. It's rough.
What?
But we have so that's when I would sit in, was probably between like 11 and I think 11 and 4 is when I would go in. And so we'd a lot of stuff would be going on during then, and a lot of it really is like the call volume is just like, hey, I'm going to be doing a control burn. I need this information from this inmate. I need to be transferred to the jail deputy. Do you have a sergeant on duty? You know, like, it's a lot of, just a lot of non-emergency calls, I guess. There's some days, especially when the weather is bad here, that the we get a lot of the 911 calls and everything. I do remember the first time, though, we had the dispatcher I was sitting with, she had a call for domestic violence going on the freeway. And so I was like sitting there, and I mean, she's the only one in there, and she's like, I need this person to go here. And she's on the phone with the person. I mean, she's getting a couple of different calls elsewhere to like let them know these people are like sitting on the side of the freeway throwing rocks at each other.
Whoa.
So yeah, they I just remember sitting there looking at her, like, and I mean, she's like logging everything and she's doing it and she's, you know, getting back to non-emergency traffic elsewhere that's just like routine from the deputies and everything, and I'm like, okay.
Oh man.
But I remember her too, like, she, like, everything was finally all good with that when she had gotten done, and she like ended the phone call, she like close out all the incidents. She's like, all right, that's probably about the most excitement we'll get for today.
Oh jeez. So those, when I was in dispatch, we would call those rolling domestics. Because in the car, if they're in the car and it's going, it's a rolling DV. And I only took a few of those when I was still dispatching, and I remember that was probably one of the most challenging calls, only because they're hauling ass on the highway, and I'm talking to the wife, and I'm like, if you want help, excuse me, you need to pull over, right. And you need to pull over, and you have to wait for the officer to get there, and a lot of it, you know, ends up coming in with, you know, trying to be almost like a good salesman in a sense, because you need to convince them.
Right. Yeah. You gotta sell your point. Stop. And like,
right. Yeah. 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 And you know, the service that they end up getting is the officer getting there to help them. Yeah. You know, sometimes you have to approach it like that, almost, that, you know, what it is that they want, they will get, which is help. But in this sense, you need to pull over, because otherwise the officer's not going to be able to get to you if you continue going.
Yeah, so cavalry, they're coming, but we can't find you.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes people listen, sometimes people don't. Luckily, I was able to get them to pull over for this one. And I just remember my supervisor at the time, because it was before I got promoted to supervisor myself. I just remember looking up over my cube or over my console rather, and my supervisor going just threw a thumbs up, and I was like, yes, yeah, definitely. But there's a lot of things like that where you have to kind of dip into the things that you know, you know, and if you're good at talking, you can definitely get people to do what needs to be done so that they can get the help that they need.
Right.
It's an interesting job, but I loved every moment of it.
Yeah.
So you end up going for that week, and you're listening to all of this stuff. But when you first got in there, because you said this was 2 weeks before you ended up getting hired in, right?
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks originally before I actually was hired and then able to come into dispatch and like actually set out a console. And
so then when you go in there, what is that like? What is that like for you? Because as you mentioned in the beginning, there's like 6 monitors, right? So to paint a picture for everyone else who's watching and listening, what is that like for you, and what are you thinking? And the reason I ask is because when I ended up going, when I ended up moving back home to Southwest Michigan, where I finished off my dispatching career, it was a completely different game, because I'm coming from a small little police department where it's just me on for 8 hours. Now there's 3 to 4 people on the floor. The call volume is way higher than what it was before, and way more monitors, and I am overwhelmed. I walk in, I'm like, oh shit, am I going to be able to do this? Because everyone is just moving, doing what they're doing and all this other stuff. And I'll admit, I was overwhelmed. So what was it like for you as you're walking in and you see all this stuff? What is it that you see?
So when you first walk into dispatch, there's like the way that you walk in over to the left is a console. And then if you walk like further and then to the right, there's the a door to the jail and then another console right there. And honestly, I just remember like after watching my supervisor do the stuff that she did and everything and how that she handled it, I'm like, man, this is so much responsibility on my shoulders. What am I doing? But that first week, it was kind of relieving, I guess, because that entire first week I was like reading over the policy book and just kind of sitting and like learning, you know, different policies, procedures, and everything. We had also started, I started the week of Burning Man. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but
yes, yeah. Yeah, for those who might not know what Burning Man is, what is that, and how does that impact all of you in there?
To the festival goers, if you will, Burning Man is an art festival. Mm-hmm. To us, it is just a way in and out to go out and do a bunch of drugs, be stupid, whatever, run around freaking naked. Apparently, I personally went out to Burning Man. My supervisor had went out there for a couple, a good few years ago, I believe, and she was out there processing evidence and stuff, and she was like, it is insane. Any of the deputies that I talk to that come back, it's insane. I mean, the event itself borders, I think, three counties. It's Washoe County, Humboldt County, and Pershing County. So we've got all of those different law enforcement agencies coming down. There was an incident down there that I kind of had to help with after the fact of Burning Man or whatever. And unfortunately, like for us, from Burning Man, I think is, I want to say like an hour and a half away from us. We're out in like right in the middle of Pershing County, and then Burning Man is out in the Black Rock Desert, and that's like a mountain or two over. You got to take I-80 to get everything. So it can be rough, you know, after the, you know, before and after, especially the event. You have a lot of calls coming in. People are like coming down off their highs and like realizing like, oh my God, my stuff's missing. A lot of theft reports, a lot of, with that too, the entire agency is required. I can't remember what they call it, but required, like on required overtime. So rather than just having like one dispatcher in dispatch, there is required to be two. During the time of Burning Man, I want to say that it's like a week and a half to 2 weeks or something like that, that we have that we're having to be on this overtime, because things definitely can just get super crazy out there and stuff. So there's a couple of deputies that will stay behind and everything after the event ends to make sure everybody gets out and everything. I think November we finally started to stop getting calls for theft reports out there. I was getting so tired.
Holy moly. So wait, so how long does this festival last?
The festival itself lasts a week, but they start preparing for it, I want to say about May or June, maybe a little earlier. Then afterwards, I can't remember exactly how much time it took for everybody to get off the playa, but I mean, there was like cars and cars just like backed up just to get out of the playa. And I want to say it definitely at least took the day for everybody to get out of that traffic jam and back out onto the freeway.
Holy crap. Okay, so I might reconsider now going to this festival because I've heard that it's pretty nuts. Like I've seen videos and stuff. I mean, it looks pretty gnarly. Like it looks fun, but I also have a friend who every year for 3 or 4 years now, they have actually gone out there to set up and dispatch from there.
Yeah.
Like they've got a team out there, and she has gone out there every year for the past 3 to 4 years now. And I was with her at a conference a couple of years ago, and she was telling me about this, and she goes, you should come out. It'd be awesome. You can dispatch there. I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, it sounds pretty hardcore, but now listening to you, I might not ever leave. I might be stuck in a traffic jam the whole time.
For real. I had the dispatcher that was working that I felt so bad for her. I wish she would have called. I mean, at the time I was just in training, but I could have at least helped like direct like non-emergency calls.
Yeah.
He said that it was 911 after 911. This guy sexually assaults me. This guy did this. This guy took this. I mean, she was like, it was just back to back to back. And she was the only one in there. I felt so bad for her that last day, or I guess it would have been the day after the event, because she was like, it was just nonstop.
Holy crap. And then the fact that you end up getting phone calls and everything else, like you said, for those who are coming back to reality, right?
Yeah, exactly.
and noticing certain things. And you said like a week or two after the event, people are still calling?
At least, yeah. And then the last call that I got in regards to something that was stolen out there, I think was back in like November. And the event is in August.
Holy crap. But What a time to be training. Like,
I know. Yeah. I've been training for that. And that was like, seriously at that week too. So I am a criminal justice major. I'm going through school for that. So I started school the day that I started work, and the first day of Burning Man, it was great.
Dude, there's like a triple threat right there. Yeah. Not only are you starting school, but you're starting dispatch and hello Burning Man.
Exactly.
What the hell? What are you thinking?
I know, right? I mean, that's my principal. She's like, you know, you got a lot of stuff going on your plate right now. I'm like, I know. She's like, you all right? No.
I kind of feel like just listening to you and seeing you laugh about it as well. I kind of feel like you wouldn't have it any other way though. No. Like you kind of dig all of this.
I really do. My husband, he does the same thing, you know, like I'm getting ready to start school up again on the 23rd. And he was like, you need to take lesser classes. You know, you're always constantly busy. And I'm just thinking, like, staying busy is how I guess I keep my bad stuff away. Like, if I can stay busy, if I can stay, you know, just constantly doing something, I'm fine. And if I just sit here in my house and I just, like, do nothing on my days off, I go insane. Like,
I know exactly what you mean. That's why I have that print press back there and like all this other stuff that I do. Cause I have to be constantly doing things. Right. And I feel like that also, kind of matches my dispatch brain as well. Because when you're in there, there's stuff that's constantly happening. Even if phone calls aren't coming in, there's still radio traffic. There's stuff to learn, you know? Yeah. And I mean, you're always learning when you go in. There's always something new with this profession. And I think that's why I loved it so much, because you come in and it's different. I mean, the incident types might be the same, right? You might get a domestic every single day, but the situation involved in that domestic will be different all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating. It's a fascinating job, and that's why people are always asking questions too. But like, thinking back to when I was dispatching, and I think it was actually during my training, I had domestic calls back to back, and one of them was nothing physical. It was just verbal. We got people out there. Everything was fine. The call immediately after that one, hang up, pick up the next one, another DV. Again, verbal, nothing physical. But in this one, it was a guy who was in his 40s arguing with his girlfriend who was in her mid-60s. They lived in an RV behind their friend's house, and she was throwing out his spam.
Oh my god.
Right. So there's, you know, yes, yeah, it was the craziest thing, because like, so the guy, I'm talking to the guy, and I said, just stay separated from her, you know, we're gonna get help out there, you know, I'm just asking all these questions, continuing the conversation to until somebody gets there to make sure that everything is fine. And then out of nowhere he says, she's throwing out my spam. And I said, excuse me, I said, like spam, like the food, right? And he goes, yeah, she's throwing out all my cans of spam from the RV. And I hear her in the background yell, you don't eat that shit anyway. And I'm like, okay, like, stay separated, don't go over there, you don't want to get hit. Right, you don't want to get hit by the can, so just stay separated. And they did, but that's what I mean, you know, anything can happen in 911, and you can go again the same incident type back to back, but a different situation completely.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of, and I live, so where I work is on Lovelock, but I live in Winnemucca, and everybody around Winnemucca would tell you there's a lot of weird mofos in Lovelock. They're just weird.
Well, and
it's like you just see them walk around and it's like, man, I probably talked to you on the phone at some point, but putting a name to your face is
right. Yeah. It's interesting. I remember going to, you know, like the gas station, like I lived about 45 minutes from the center that I worked at, and it was in a different county. And as they say, ignorance is bliss. And I don't always want to, you know, I don't want to know what's going on with my neighbors, but when I would, you know, before going into dispatch or after dispatch, whichever, you know, I'd stop at a gas station, something like that. And I would be in line, and I remember I would look at people and just be like, I wonder if I've spoken to this person.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I wonder if there's been anything, you know, and it was always funny. Or I would hear someone say a name that I knew from a phone call, and I would go, that was that person.
I know.
yeah, like, I know you, and you don't know me, which is good.
I know all your baby mama jokes.
yes. Yeah, that stuff too, man. Like, that shit happens. Really? Every Friday and Sunday, it goes down. It never fails.
Yeah. And it always seems to be, like, on my Friday, too. Like, it either... So, the way that we work is three on... So... My shift is every other Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So I work every Thursday and Friday, and then I work every other Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So like this week, I'm going on my 4-day stretch. And like that, especially on the holidays, I found out like the whole stretch could be like nothing. Nothing's going on. And then like 3-4 o'clock hits, and I was like, this dude is like stuck here. This is happening at this place. And I'm like, y'all, I got 30 minutes left, and y'all couldn't have like made me less bored earlier. What are you doing? I was just sitting there. I take my coloring books and stuff, and I color while I'm sitting in dispatch because I work 12-hour shift. So I'm just like,
right.
To make the time pass. And so I dispatch for police, EMS, the sheriff's office, and then our tribal place out here. We have a colony in Lovelock. And he's just running like regular little traffic on me or whatever. One of the sergeants for the sheriff's office was working on traffic stops with me, because when I first had learned how to do traffic stops, it was like, you know, this vehicle is registered to this out of here, everything's called for or whatever with it. And he's like, you know, whenever we're doing this, just say your 27s, 29s are all clear and valid, 27s, 28s, 29s. And so I'd finally got that down, and I felt a lot better with it. I wasn't having such an entire like speech across on air. And tribal comes through and wants me to run a 28, which is your vehicles. And I was like, 10-4, I got you, hold on. So I'm doing it. And I get on the radio, and I'm like feeling really good. I'm like, 27s, 28s, 29s are all clear and valid, sir. And he was like, who's the RO, meaning registered owner? And I was like, yeah. Oh, hang on, let me look. So I told him, and he's like, okay. And so then he engaged in a traffic stop. And I was like, all right, you know, no big deal. I do these most all the times. I'm not a fan of the word routine traffic stops. They're never routine.
Right.
Actually, like, you know, doing your regular thing or whatever. And he's like, I'm in pursuit with this subject, you know, failed to stop. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Turns out he was in a whole like hot pursuit with the guy. And I was sitting one of my first days in dispatch by myself, and I called my supervisor on the phone. And I'm like, shit's going down, I don't know what to do. She was like, click hot pursuit, open the doors, I'm coming in.
Oh man.
Well, he ended up like stopping on the, I can't even remember, he's stopping somewhere and then took off on foot, and so they were attempting to locate for him on foot. And I'm like, this couldn't have happened earlier today, because it was about 3 at this point. And then I had a 911 call in Lovelock. I had a crash out on the freeway in the North County, which is where I live, and then just a couple of other, you know, like non-emergency things. And I'm like, I think this is on Thanksgiving or the day after Thanksgiving. I'm like, what is going on? All day, nothing. And now this happens.
Oh, jeez. It happens that way, right? You know, you've got basically nothing going on. You know, maybe he calls here and there, you know, medical, whichever. And then it happens. It ends up hitting, and you're like, huh? Like, why is this happening? Oh man, yeah, anything can happen in 911. And I'll give you an example as well. So I did this for about 14 years, and my last day in dispatch, I worked a 1P to 1A shift. I'm the supervisor on, and the reason I worked that swing shift was because I wanted to work with the morning team and those out on the road, and then with my team, finish it off with them and those folks out on the road. Well, the person who was supposed to come in for me was going to be the 1A to 5A portion of that. And they called in sick. So in true dispatch fashion, my final shift of my dispatching career was an overtime shift 16 hours. So, but I did that on my own. I decided to do that because we were going to go, I'm supposed to go down the force enlist and all this other stuff. And I thought, nah, I am not going to have anyone get forced in. I'm going to volunteer for it. Plus, I'll get to continue to, I'll finish it off with my team. So there's about 30, 40 minutes left. And I had been working phones the whole time. So those last 4 hours, I finished it off on law enforcement radio, on main radios. And I was joking with my team. And I said to them, now it's almost time for me to leave. And then I'm done. This is my last shift with you guys and of my career. One thing, though, that I'm kind of happy about is that out of all of these years that I've been dispatching, I did not have to translate for Spanish, like for a medical. I didn't have to do that. And one of my coworkers started laughing and she goes, "You just jinxed yourself." And I was like, "Nah, there is no way, no way with this little bit amount of time left that something like that would happen. There isn't." But I was tempting fate. It's basically like saying the Q word in dispatch. You're tempting fate when you do that. And so I'm sitting there just looking at the clock, ready for it to be done. And the phone rings. And I hear my partner on the other side saying, un momento, like, hold on a minute, hold on a second. And I started laughing. I was like, hell no, no, there's no way. And I look at my partner who's sitting next to me and she goes, "I told you." And I said, "No, this can't be." So I hear the phone, you know, hang up and I started laughing. I was like, "Oh, I thought you were messing with me." And she's still laughing and she stands up and she goes, "You got to take this call right now." And I said, "Are you messing? Are you for real?" And she goes, "It's for real. Like, you need to translate this." And I was like, shit. I was like, okay. So I get on the line and sure as shit, it was a medical that I had to translate for Spanish. Yeah, I could not believe it. So I, you know, the guy was, he was drunk off his ass, but he was having a panic attack that was going on. He had trouble breathing. He was visiting friends. So he had no idea where he was. This is the middle of the night. Well, very, very early in the morning, rather, I should say, because it was after 4 a.m. And luckily, I knew exactly where he was. He was in a portion of the county that I grew up going to in that area. So I knew exactly where he was, got help out there, EMS got there, and he didn't have to be transported. He decided later that he didn't need anything, but he had like 6 or 7 other friends there, but they were all passed out drunk too. Like, you could hear them all snoring in the background. He's like, "I can't wake anybody up." You know, he's telling me all this in Spanish. He goes, "I don't know where I'm at. I don't know what's going on, but I can't breathe that well." But it ended up being that he was just having a panic attack and they didn't transport him. But I get off the line and I'm sitting there thinking, what are the odds?
Right.
What are the odds? Like, that's astronomical. Like, there's no way, but it happened. 911, anything can happen.
Exactly. And I think that's what I love so much about it. I was talking to my supervisor a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And like, when I worked for Swenson and stuff, I was doing the same thing every day, same payroll, same tax returns, you know, during taxes and stuff. I mean, this is just different every day. Like you said, you know, you can have the same type of incidents, but it's going to be a different sort of incident. Like,
yeah.
What's going on with it is different than what could have been going on with it yesterday, you know? And I'm like, you never know. And she's been working there for 11 years, I think. And she was mm-hmm. like, "I'm still learning." So I think that's why I love it so much, because it just keeps me on my toes. It keeps me busy. And there's some days where I'm not busy and stuff too, but like, I guess that's the beauty of it. I mean,
yeah,
you never know. Waking up in the morning, what kind of day is it going to be like?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So in with you, just, you know, basically fresh out of training and everything, what was that training like for you? Was there anything that that surprised you once you got in there and started working on things?
So with this agency in particular, I have never, and I've told my supervisor this too, I have never been trained like in such a better way. I mean, like when I worked for the Walmart or Subway, it was like, all right, here's how this works, now go do it. And with this, I think I was in from 9 to 12 weeks, I think, is how long it took me to finish it. And if I ever had any questions, they were always like right there. They always made it to where I could, like, if there was something that I was having a hard time with, they made it to where I would understand. It was so in depth, and I was definitely wasn't expecting that with as small of an agency as we are. Mm-hmm. And there were three or four weeks before I would actually start taking like non-emergency calls, and then a couple weeks after that is when I would start taking 911 calls. And it was surprising to me, because I expected to be like for it to be like any other job and just be like, you know, here's a week of training, okay, now go try. But I mean, they were always like right there with me whenever I had to work on what we call like in CGIS, or for NCIC and stuff. Mm-hmm. They would sit there and like walk me through it and show me how and stuff. And because right before this, I worked for Coach, which is a bus industry. Mm-hmm. And even with that, I mean, I was within training, but it was just to learn like our pre-run thing and stuff. That's what took the longest. And then as soon as I passed that test and I did like two ride-alongs with other drivers, they're like, all right, now you can do it by yourself. And so that was like a whole, like you're driving a big bus with like 53 people in it. And so,
right.
Which is what I was expecting with this, but I mean, it was way different. And the way that they've, I guess like I'm kind of like the guinea pig with this new training thing that they're implementing. Cause when I got hired was right when my supervisor was promoted. Mm-hmm. And so I think she's working to try and, get a lot better of a training time down and stuff like that, so that people will stay and they won't like get, you know, overwhelmed and be like, all right, peace out, never mind.
Right. yeah, no, exactly. And so that is awesome to hear as well, that, you know, the training was done in that fashion, because there are a lot of folks who, you know, they will end up eventually becoming a trainer as well because of one of two things. And it's usually they had like crap training and they don't want anybody else to have to go through that. So they end up becoming a trainer, right? And they end up, when people come in, they teach them in a way that they were not taught, so that it's a way better experience. But also on the same side of that is, there are people who eventually become trainers because they had such great training. I'm not saying that it's going to push you to do the same thing, but the fact that you had such a good experience, I mean, you never know. You know, that might be something that interests you or others because of the fact that they had good training like that. It's always good to have something in that sense, because there are a lot of places that, you know, they want self-starters. But in a job like this, you can have a self-starter, but you still need to give a lot of direction and be patient and just kind of give that good experience, because otherwise, you know, people end up leaving.
Yeah. And that's what our agency has had a lot, unfortunately, with our past supervisors and stuff. It becomes too much and they leave, you know, like with me, they were always like right there. Even now that I'm out of training and stuff, my supervisor she's always right there. You know, if I ever have any questions, her door is always open and stuff. Mm-hmm. The way that they're doing this now, it's just so in depth, and I love it. It's, there's just so much that they try to pack in over a course of these weeks. I think it's the total amount for training is like 16 weeks or something. And I finished in like it was like 9 to 12 weeks or something that I ended up. She was like, okay, I think you can be on your own now and stuff. And
nice.
Yeah.
So then when she said, I think you can be on your own now, what was your thought?
I was it was our last day. I think we had started off that week working in dispatch together, and she like had turned around and she looked at me and she was like, all right, I think I'm going to start working in my office here, you know, in a couple of days. She's like, how do you feel about that? I'm like, oh, I feel great. It's fine. And so we call it the hot seat. It's console one in there, because there's one and two. And we call that one the hot seat. That's where, you know, the person on console two is just typically just backup if things get way too overwhelming. And so that next day, she's like, all right, I think I'm going to, next day or maybe the day after, she's like, I think I'm just going to work in my office. She's like, you know, obviously I'm always here if you need something. And I remember sitting in that chair, like at that console for the first time. And I was like, well, all right.
waiting for the phone to ring.
Right. I was just like, it was rough.
I can relate. My training for my the first center that I worked at, however, was a little different. So I'll compare with you on that first, you know, time going into it and everything. But I had gone in for the small police department, had the interview, didn't hear anything from them for like 2 months. And I thought I screwed it up. I was like, man, I thought I had a good interview. I haven't heard from them. I don't know what's going on. And then the chief actually shows up at my house, and I go to talk to him, and he asked me if I wanted the job. And I said, yes. However, I had to ask too, like, why, what happened? Cause I hadn't heard anything from you guys. I thought something, you know, bad happened. And he goes, no. He goes, our background check is just pretty thorough. So, you know, we finally got word back and we want to offer you the job. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be starting in like a week, right? Or at least whatever, a couple days later or something. So, you know, I asked him when I start, and he said, you start tonight. And I said, oh. and he goes, well, you still want the job, right? And I said, no, well, I do. I just wasn't expecting that. And he goes, basically, he's like, we don't nickel and dime, you know, you either want the job or not. So I go in that night, first time working midnight shift ever, I think, out of all the years that I had been working just in general. And it was 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. was the shift. I walk in. My trainer, very seasoned dispatcher, I'll just leave it at that. he shows me everything, and I'm like freaking out already because I have no public safety experience or anything. I only have TV shows that I watched, right? That's the only thing I had to reference. And he takes a 911 call, and I observe him. And then he turns around and he says, you're next.
Oh my goodness.
Right. I thought, hell no. Like I thought he was joking, but then he gives me this like dead ice look and he goes, no, I'm serious. And I said, that's it. I said, there's nothing else. There's no other training. And he goes, well, you're going to end up going to a 40-hour beginners, you know, dispatcher course. However, he goes, the only way you're really going to learn is by jumping in and taking these calls because you learn on the job. And it basically told me that what it takes is to be human, common sense, thick skin. And, you know, there's just all these quick decisions, but the main thing being human.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the biggest thing, but I was like you, I was freaking out, man. I was, but this is day one and, or night one. And I remember freaking out because I didn't know what that first call was going to be. And then the phone rang and I pick it up and say my thing. And the person goes, oh, I'm sorry. It was a butt dial. I'm like, oh, thank God. Yes. And then, you know, after that, it was fine. You know, I mean, of course, it was still kind of freaked out, but not freaked out like that because the first one was over and done with. But man, that was something else to go in there day one.
It's like, you don't know what you're doing, and I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And then like the more that you go through them, I think personally for me, I've gotten more comfortable with it for sure. Mm-hmm. I feel like the beginning of every week, though, I reset. I'm like, all right, I'm new to this. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well. And just wait, like when you end up taking, let's just say like a vacation, even if you're, you know, have got 4 days off in a row or something like that, it just like you're saying, when you come back, but even more so when it's a vacation and you've been gone for a week or something, you come back and you feel rusty already.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
I was just sick for 2 weeks, back in like, I think it was like the middle of December. Mm-hmm. And I had no intention. I just wanted to take a couple days off, but they're like, no, go ahead and stay out until you're like feeling 100% better. And I'm like, all right, fine. Well, I come back in 2 weeks later and I'm like, what? How do you see this thing up? I don't know how anything works. I don't remember my password.
Oh man, and that's the worst, right? Especially because there's so many things that you have to log into, and the possibility of you coming in when the password, when it's time to change your password again, you're like, what the hell? Like, I don't know that I have that many combinations of passwords to put in there to continue doing what I'm doing. Right.
And after I had been sick too, I had to change my password for J Client, for our, where we run all of our stuff in. And I'm like, I called my supervisor. I'm like, it's prompting me to change my damn password. I don't even know what my other password was. It was auto-filled in there. Oh. Like, all right, just call the help desk and they'll probably figure it out. And I'm like, what the heck, dude?
Oh my god, it
was a really shitty day too, just a lot going on that day.
Those are, yeah, definitely the hard ones, especially if you're going in where just, you know, stuff in general at home has been hard, or you're just things, just life, right? Life is happening, and then you get in there and the thing pops up and it's like, hey, it's time to do a new password. You're like, are you serious? Like, it's just one more thing.
You're gonna inconvenience me with this crap.
Right, yes, exactly. It's like, how dare you, computer. So, you know, what are some of the other, you know, kind of, I guess, earlier calls, you know, especially during training? You know, you're off training now, but well, how about this? When that first 911 call went off that was for you to end up taking, what was that like?
That was terrifying. I remember, so I was just answering the non-emergency calls. Yeah. And my supervisor got off on 911. She's like, you think you're ready to start taking 911 calls? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And she's like, all right, it's yours. And I was like, okay. So I come through, and I remember when I answered it, I screwed up on my introduction. Bad. And so that was rough. But then it sounded like it was a little girl who was talking. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Are you freaking kidding me? No. Well, it turns out that the individual who was talking was she was a lot older than what she sounded like.
Yeah.
My dogs might start barking. She was a lot older than what she sounded like, and I think her aunt had fallen or something. She had broken a couple bones and everything. But she was pretty freaked out. But so when I asked her, you know, so for us, when we first, our introduction or whatever, ours is Pershing County 911, where's the location of the emergency? So I just said, 911, what's your emergency? And she's like, starts like rambling off like everything. And I'm like, okay, you know, trying to get my thoughts collected.
Right.
And the important thing, you know, where are you at? And she was like, she had said the name of the road. And I was thinking, I was like, because where the call was at was where I live out here in Grass Valley. And I was like, that number is not on that road. That number, because the road that she was talking about, it's all thousands. And I was like, there's no way. And so I verified that address with her like multiple times. And she was like, no, it's this. And I was like, okay. So I put everything in and sent out to Plex for first responders. So because Lovelock is so far from Grass Valley, we have to call for the ambulance. We have to call Humboldt County's dispatch for the ambulance one in town for them to come out here, because there's no way we're gonna make it out from Lovelock. It's an hour drive.
Yeah.
And so I forgot to do that. I just got the first responders flex. That was cool. So I finally got them en route and everything, and I hear word from the first responders that they can't find this address, and they're all going to what they call POV, which is like personal operator vehicle or whatever.
Yeah.
And I can't find this address. And I was like, okay, you know, let me call back and make sure that this is correct. And so I called her back, and she was like, no, it's this address, not on Muddy. And I'm like, are you free? I verified with you like three times and you said it was all Muddy. So I got them back and I let them know and stuff, and they went out there. And of course I had fire meeting that night. We love that. And so they were all giving me shit. They're like, you know this area and you didn't know where that address was. I was like, three times I verified that. And that was my first time in the world called, get out. You come in dispatch, tell me how you see it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. Because you can only go off of what people are giving you. Right.
Yeah,
and especially if, you know, you check your map and it's a good address, it's kind of hard, you know, especially when people are giving you shit about it. It's like,
absolutely,
yeah. Verified it three times, looked at the map, you know, or whatever. And right. It's a real address. What else are you going to do? You know, because a lot of people don't have landlines anymore. Right. So it's, you go off of the cell phone. And of course there's other technology and everything that, that can help pinpoint certain, locations. But if you don't have the technology either, then, I mean, there's, you only can go off of what someone gives you. And that's a hard thing too, especially because, you know, we end up taking these calls, right? And one, it doesn't help if people even jokingly sometimes are giving you shit about it, because there's nothing that anyone else can say to you that is going to probably make you feel worse than you already feel, right? Exactly. Because we're our own worst critics.
Right. Absolutely. And I am the worst for that too. My supervisor is always going to come in and be like, "You're still learning. It's fine." It's just like, stop being so hard on yourself. I'm like, I know, but I go into things like wanting it to be perfect, and dispatch isn't always perfect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's as much as you want to be, sometimes it hinders you in a way, you know, that wanting to be perfect, especially because it is 911. We're dealing with people's lives, but you can only be as good as you are. You go on, you know, go off of your training, right? Or anything else that you've learned, and you do your best. That's all you can do is do your best. It's, you know, it's like doctors, like you want them to be perfect, but they're not going to be.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can hope, you can pray, but they can only be as good as they are, and just be, just do what they can. And that's how we do this thing, as well. So it has been awesome to have you on this episode and to learn more about you and joke and everything, and really kind of hear this perspective of you in training, getting started, and really just getting into this profession. I mean, you're 5 months in, you're now on your own and taking calls and everything, but I love your attitude as well going into this. This is what we need more of, or folks like you are getting into this and just loving every moment and stuff, and just hold on to that. Don't let others bring you down, right? Because there's a lot of people too that are in this profession who have become a little jaded, you know, and there's those rough attitudes, and maybe it's from the time that they came in, that's how it was, but everyone can change. I think some of the things that happened though, is that there are a lot of folks who have done this for a long time that when they do get to that part, I think it's because they've kind of forgotten, you know, how it was in the beginning for them. And I think if we try to remember that more and kind of reflect, and I think that's why conversations like we're having now is so important for people to hear, but also to continue that conversation within the center. If people could just talk to each other on a level like this, like we're doing now, I think things would be a lot better.
I think so too. Yeah. It's definitely personally for me, like, talking it out and, you know, talking through those bad things or the good things, you know, and I've learned that a lot of this is just taking the good with the bad. I mean, you know, this was a bad one, next one might be funny. It is what it is. But definitely just being able to sit and have a discussion with someone and feel like you can connect with them on that level and that you're not alone. Like, there's always someone there for you and stuff. I think it's super important. There's a couple of people in my facility that I can think of that are definitely very, very jaded with it. And it makes me sad, but I hope that at some point, you know, they realize it's, you know, there's always someone there, that's someone's door is always open there for sure.
Right. And maybe, you know, those folks or anybody else in other agencies or anything that are like that, maybe that's all they need. Maybe all they need is conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you so much for being on. This has been awesome. I've got one last question, especially because of where you're at right now in your career. For anyone who is looking at getting into dispatch, or maybe they're in training right now and you know, maybe they're kind of struggling and feel as though they're alone, what is some advice that you have for those folks?
Just keep swimming. just keep going. It gets easier. You'll figure it out. That is one thing that I have had a really hard issue with, is learning to run the radio, the phone, and our system all at the same time. It gets easier. You're going to learn it. it definitely gets better. And if, you know, you feel like you're having issues and stuff, go to your supervisor, go to your uppers or whatever. And personally for me, I have my supervisor along with like other deputies and stuff that I can ask that understand the system and stuff. They want you there. They want you to succeed. And I promise it does get easier. It may not seem like it right now, but just stick with it. It's not a job that you can just like walk into and understand everything perfectly. It's a learning experience. And it's at some point, you know, it'll get easier. You know, things will work themselves out for sure. You'll learn it.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you again, Shay, for being on. This has been a pleasure. And I look forward to hearing more from you and the rest of your journey in this career, in this profession. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I will be right back here with you in just one moment. And for those who are watching and listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that is WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode has been sponsored by InDigital. And a big shout out to patrons as well as Facebook subscribers. And if you want to become a patron of the podcast, help support us, you can check us out. And that's going to be patreon.com/WTTpodcast. As for Facebook subscriptions, if you want to be a subscriber off of Facebook, you can go to the podcast page, which again is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And there should be a button there that just says subscribe. And you can jump on. There's a lot of bonus content that's coming for both of them. And I'm excited to have you all, because without all of you, I wouldn't be able to do everything that I do. So thank you so, so very much. And again, this is the 10-year anniversary of the podcast, and it has been an amazing experience. So thank you all so, so much. This can be seen on Facebook, YouTube, as well as Twitter. And then you can listen 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone. And we will see you in the next one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.